This is the Creative Sports Podcast.
My name is Justin Peterson.
And joining me are Brock Rahm.
It's amazing to me to see the parallels between your world and the creative world.
And Garrett Wright.
Does it ever feel weird just putting a camera in someone's face and I'm just like, no.
We feel like it's important as creatives to have a business conversation. So today's going to be slightly different. We're fortunate to have Dugout Mug CEO and co-founder Chris Dennert joining us to share how Dugout Mugs approaches the business of selling memories.
Get over to time that is. If you guys are there, do the clap and get going.
Yes, sir.
I'm there. Let's do 42.
All right. Good to have everybody back. Good to roll.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the show. My name is Garrett Wright. I want to start out with a big thank you to APM Music for donating the tracks we use on this podcast. Also, a reminder that this podcast is an extension of the sports creative community on Slack. So if you're hearing this and not a member of that community yet, you should head over to sportscreativeslack.com and sign up for free.
All right. So today we have CEO and co-founder Chris Dennert of Dugout Mugs. And on the site, Chris, I'm reading directly off this. You have the nickname Promo. I guess that's maybe a good place to start.
Yeah, dude.
How did that come about?
Well, so Dugout Mugs is actually, you know, like my seventh or eighth venture. I've had a lot of different businesses. And I think part of the magic on why they've all worked as well as they did, because I'm just a closer, you know. At the end of the day, I got a lot of grit. I got a lot of hustle. I can sell. I'm good with people. Big stages don't bother me. And if we need somebody hyping up Dugout Mugs, I'm the guy. I was just in Baltimore 2 days ago with Cal Ripken at the Cal Ripken event. We had an opportunity. We got a last minute invite. I'm on a plane. I'm up there and I had breakfast with Raleigh Fingers and Goose Gossage all morning, locked up a couple deals with those guys. Then it's out there to the thing. Two of the cigar companies that were out, you know, it's just, I love that. I love the hustle, man. That's how I'm built. And it's worked along the way, and it certainly worked with Dugout Mug.
So let me continue the rest of what it says here, because it says you're always swinging for the fences. I think you just covered that right there, right? You have an extensive background with business growth development, and you have the ability to get mugs to the masses. So as you were just mentioning, being up in Baltimore recently, what are your objectives when you're trying to get the Dugout Mugs to the masses?
Relationships. That's where it starts and ends. I have a saying that I absolutely love, and it's not who you know, it's who knows you. And I think there's a huge differentiation there where, you know, you talk to a lot of people, they're quick to drop a name. They're quick to, oh, I know that guy. No, they don't. You call and they don't even know whose phone number it is, right? At the end of the day, it's who knows you. And so I'm big on relationships, legitimate relationships, genuine relationships. And again, being unapologetically authentic is something else that I'm big on, because then from day one, they get to know the real you. And, you know, the promo side, the hype side, the, you know, personality side, it's about being memorable. And then, you know, anybody who's doing good business will tell you, it's like, you know, do what you say, right? So you meet them, they meet the real you, you follow up, you do what you say you're going to do. You know, I think, and it's all built in relationships. And I think relationships are built in conversations. So, you know, I'm a big belly to belly guy. You know, I love people. Even through the pandemic, it's whatever, right? I'm a people guy. And, that's taken me a long way. So in all these events, my objectives, overall is create relationships. Now, specifics, I would say, who's the most important person in that room and how do I meet them? Right. That's a strategy I've used for a long, long time. I actually have an obnoxious business card and I'm flashy. Like I have on shorts, no shoes and a hat right now. Like this is what it is. And I'm the same me all the time, but I have this business card. It's metal. And anybody who's ever seen my business card, they'll tell you, I got a metal card. It's me like Ham Porter pointing up, holding a Dugout Mug. It's ridiculous. But they can't throw it away, right? And that's all part of it. It's all part of the being memorable, being unique, be somebody that somebody else wants to know. And that's probably my second objective. Just be unique. Be me. You know, some will like me. Most will like me. Some won't. I'm not worried either way.
How do you develop that skill set, right? Because it is something that comes naturally, those kind of soft skills and those people skills. But there still is an evolution of doing that when you're, you know, in an industry like that where you have to really build relationships. Is it just reps, you know, to kind of get to know people? And I mean, you just at some point have to understand people at an innate level to do what you do, right?
All of it. And there's different parts, right? So reps, certainly. I think something that most people don't do often enough is get outside of their comfort zone. Like literally, what in the hell is the worst thing that can happen right now? Right? Someone's like, hey, you're annoying. Okay. You know, I think once you, you know, they say a balloon, it expands, right? And it'll never go back to the same size it ever was because of that expansion. Well, that's who we are. So I always encourage people, it's like, get outside of your comfort zone, man. You never know what you're capable of. There's been plenty of people telling me my whole life, can't do this, can't do that. You know, you should do this, and you're shooting all over me, right? You should do this, you should do that. It's like, I'm going to be me, and I'm going to just go beyond what I think I can do. And then what happens, you get there, and you're like, wow, that was easy. You know, and then there's a comfortability and a confidence level that comes with that. And I think too often, you know, and I'll revert back to what I said a minute ago, and it's that unapologetically authentic part. People are too concerned with what other people think of them. And it's this disgusting facade, right? And what happens is, and for me, you know, it's all transitional. Like you don't start there, you get there. And for me, I don't know, man. I just stopped caring about who I was trying to be for different people, because then it's exhausting trying to remember. So I think that's a big part of it. And just really stopping and doing a little bit of self-exploration. And I've talked about this on stages, and it's about understand your metrics. Like, who are you and who aren't you, and what is important to you? Because if you're constantly trying to be the person, measuring your success, if you will, by somebody else's ruler, that ain't going to work. So I think it's about really, truly understanding yourself, being comfortable with yourself, being confident with yourself and your values. And then you portray that, man, that shit's infectious. They're going to be all over that. Right. And the ones that aren't, you don't want to deal with them anyway. Right. And it just becomes a really good vibe. And when you're putting out good vibes, I mean, God knows we're at a shortage of that right now. You know, people gravitate to that.
I love that. I mean, I spoke with a class not that long ago of, you know, broadcasters and production people. And one of the questions they asked was like, man, like, does it ever feel weird just putting a camera in someone's face? And I'm just like, no, because I don't care. You know, I think that's the thing, is so many people are so worried about what everyone else thinks. And I think that, I mean, you hit the nail on the head. It's the exact message that I gave them, is just, you know, you have to be yourself. You have to find your own voice. You have to be comfortable in who you are before you're able to make those like really personal connections with people. And to your point, there are going to be some people that don't like you, but who cares? Move on. They're not the people you want to be around anyway. So I love to hear that, because I think that's so important for people to understand when you're, I mean, you know, building relationships, which is key to what we do as producers, what you're doing in, you know, sales and running a company. And it's just, that's awesome. I love to hear that. And I love the way you put that. And I love that you said, it's not who you know, it's who knows you, because I haven't heard that before, and I'm going to steal that. I love that.
Go for it. Just tag me. I'm just kidding. Yeah. You know, it's authenticity, man. Listen, at the end of the day, it's authenticity, whether it's internal with your team. And there's about 70 people that make Dugout Mugs go around, right? Like we're getting after it. And every single person in there knows the authentic management, the authentic leadership. They know us. We create that. And whether it's internally, externally, sometimes internally is even more important, just being authentic. I think there's a shortage of authenticity, and many theories on where that comes from and why it's here, and the narcissism and the social and all this other stuff going on. But find out who you really are, and a lot of things get a lot easier.
So let's talk a little bit about that. And, you know, the start of Dugout Mugs, what gave you the idea, and what was the genesis of all that to get to where you are now?
I did not come up with Dugout Mugs. my business partner, Randall Thompson, is the one that dreamt up a baseball bat barrel drinking mug. He was an ex-pitcher for the Blue Jays organization. And, you know, there's a lot of pitchers that throw 90 from the right side. And he was one of them. And that's not quite fast enough to get the job done. So he got let go. And it was a period of reinvention for himself. And always an idea guy. Right. And he's told me the stories. I wasn't there for that. But, you know, one thing led to another, and the trials and the struggles and the grit that this kid had, like, such a good human. And I was coming out of a transitional part of my life with other companies at a restaurant. I was in the cannabis space, a lot of stuff going on. And, Randall, you know, as fate would have it. And we ran into each other or he called me, read something online, and he called me out of the blue and he said, "Hey, you know, I want to pick your brain." And I was just getting out of a time where I was committed to not being just chasing rabbit holes and shit like that. So I was like, "Dude, my brain is not for picking. I apologize, but you want to bring me one of these mugs? I'm randomly over here." Met me there, brought it to the bar. And actually I got it. I'll show you right here. It sits next to my desk as a reminder. This is the first one he gave me. And I was like, "That's weird, man." And he said, "Just carry it around with you." I said, "Okay. You know, I'll carry it around with me." And I got a lot of good feedback. I was actually going to the Tim Tebow golf tournament because I was doing some stuff in and around the Tebow Foundation and Duck Dynasty and some things like that. And so I was going up to Ponte Vedra, and John Smoltz was there, and Smoltz, he signed it. I was like, "What do you think, Smoltz?" And he's like, "Oh, that's awesome." And so I just kept getting this positive, you know, reinforcement and feedback from it. And I called him like a week later and I said, "Dude, this is pretty cool. You might, you know, you got something here." And I mean, I obviously know how to sell and promote and scale things. I said, "But I got, you know," we really kind of stared at each other for a minute, and he was wondering if I grind as hard as he does and vice versa. And I said, "Listen, if you're serious about this, you'll quit your job and I'll get rid of these things I got going on, which are just sucking the life out of me anyway, to be honest." And, I said, "You weren't ready to go for this?" And we sat out on my back porch and had a cigar and, talked about it and talked about scalability. And he's like, "Let's do it." And we 10X the company in the first 90 days. And it's kind of been a rocket ship ever since, man. We've been growing by over 100% a year for 5 years, just doubling and doubling and 2.5X and right through the pandemic. And, you know, now we're $20 million a year company. It's crazy, you know, and we're selling cups and doing beer and baseball every day. And, you know, but to your initial question, I didn't come up with it. I just, I was the right guy, and he was looking for the right guy to partner up with. And I was looking for somebody that just had a good heart and a good soul and a good kid and a good idea that I could, you know, have an experiential position again, because I've done some really fun stuff, but then some really sucky stuff. And I was like, you know, I'm tired of that. You know, I had a near-death experience prior, you know, a year prior to all this. And I was ready for just a more fun, experiential venture. And it landed in my lap. It was a prayer I asked for, and it landed right in my path as it should. And he was the guy and I was the guy. And it's just like, take off.
I think what's interesting is that you talked about the uniqueness, right? And when you were presented with the bat initially, you weren't sure what to think of it.
Right.
Maybe because it was unique. How did you get past? I mean, you explained to us how you got past that by having other people go, "Okay, this is cool." And it started to gain some steam and you started to buy into it a little bit more. But I'm thinking about from the creative side, when things get pitched where they feel a little bit too unique, where they're outside the box a little bit and people question, is this really going to hit home? Now that having gone through that, how do you see things coming together like that, where you could see the uniqueness and say, "Okay, we're gonna buy into this, we're gonna invest in it, and we're gonna push the boundaries of what it can do"?
Yeah. So for me, it was more about, it wasn't, I need third party validity. I don't doubt my gut, and I haven't for a long time. Right. Sometimes I'm wrong, but many more times I'm right. And I needed the right person, which I got to know Randall, and he was certainly the right person and still is to this day. I needed the right opportunity, right? I knew exactly what to do with it. From the first meeting we had, I was like, "You do this, you do this, you put this, here's what you engrave, you go this city, target, boom, ads, blah, done. And now execution's a whole other ballgame, of course, but I knew what to do from that perspective. I needed to know that it was the right person. I needed to know that his mind was right. So from the very beginning, we discussed growing this to a point and selling it before we were even partnered. We talked about what does it look like at the 3-year, 5-year mark, right? So it's a lot deeper than that. From an idea perspective, sure, you can look at an idea and say, hey, that's weird, or hey, that's weird enough to work. And that's kind of what this was. That's weird enough to work. But again, I also have a skill set specifically in marketing, sales, and being outside the box. Now, also, you know, when, you know, say know your metrics, right? So when I look at deals, and I still do from time to time, but one of probably 6 or 7 questions that I ask myself is, who do I have in my network, right? Who knows me, by the way? Who do I have in my network that I can instantly touch base with to make this better? And I had a little bit of equity company. I still do to this day, the same company, but it was already licensed with Major League Baseball Players Association. So as soon as we got this deal, I made a call. I said, hey, so I'm one of the minority owners in this other company. We're already licensed, but I'm launching a new deal. What do we do with this? He's like, oh, you can have a license. So we had a license in 90 days, which is not typical. But again, that's the power of having a genuine network, a real network with real relationships, right? So I went through some of these processes and some of these questions, and I spoke with my wife about it. So it wasn't like, you know what I mean? It's a process. I mean, partnering with somebody, it's like marriage, man. It really is. You're getting professionally married to someone. So I just wanted to go through some of the process. The idea was weird enough to work. I asked a few people who are baseball fans. They're all beside themselves. I'm like, oh, fuck it. Maybe it'll work. Let's give it a go. And we structured it in such a way that we both win if it scaled, and we both walk away unscathed if it didn't. It was which again is another thing that I focus on, is creating a mutually beneficial relationship, win-win. If you can't both win, it's not worth doing. And so when I put the deal together with Randall, it's one of those things where it's like, if it works, we both win. If it doesn't, you're back where you started. So what? And it was enough to make him, you know, pull the trigger.
You talked about metrics. And I think one thing I see a lot with Dugout Mugs on social media is when people get it, it's unique enough, right? That people post a picture of it, right? How much of your sales, and you don't have to go into specific numbers, but how much of your sales are marketing directly from you paid versus organic social media, people saying, hey, look at this cool thing I got. Here it is. And people hearing about it word of mouth.
Well, that's a floating number. So every day that goes by, we get better at communication. We have hundreds of thousands of customers and contact information, right? So from an organic standpoint of things, we can just reach out to our email list and say, hey, we just launched our new stainless mugs. Who wants one? And then, right? So that's organic. Certainly the pay to play, you got the Googles and you got the Pinterest and the, you know, Facebooks and Instagrams and all this stuff. That's where the masses are, but that's somewhat cold traffic. I got 15 collaborations going live with players right now. Notable players. Mariano Rivera is an affiliate. Pudge Rodriguez, Pete Rose. All these guys rock our stuff publicly. And so it's marketing to me, and people ask me a question like, where do you spend most of your money? Where's your biggest return? And it's all of it, right? It's, you know, people talk about work-life balance. That's bullshit. It's life. You work and you life balance, and it's all together, right? So trying to segment these things, I look at marketing similarly, and, you know, the 500 acronyms that talk about, you know, ROI and, you know, CTA and all this crap. There's one called MER that we've been looking at lately, and it's more like the overall cost of advertising versus the overall return of advertising. And I think that's really a more realistic view of it, because sometimes they'll see you on Facebook, they'll see you on Instagram, but as soon as they see it in one of all 30 stadiums we're in, they're like, touch it, and they're like, oh man, I got to have it, right? Or, you know, it's really the multiple touch points. But we probably spend the most of our money in social media, but that's top of funnel, right? We see the highest return on our return customers, which is somewhere close to 18% from a return customer rate, which is extremely strong. And I think that comes from the fact that our product is predominantly gifted. 83% of our orders are purchasing for somebody else. So people know that when they get a good gift, they had a good response, they're going to keep coming back to that well, right? So it depends, again, metrics, right? Are we looking at the ROAS? Are we looking on the top of funnel? Are we looking at the click-through? But yeah, I think the better view is holistically.
I mean, it sounds like you've been involved in plenty of ventures, you know, before this and startups and those kind of things. I mean, for someone who is just wanting to, you know, start their own business or kind of, you know, begin a venture like that, what are the first questions that you ask yourself? If you got into a little bit of them, you know, are the people that I'm working with great? Who can I call? But like, how are you, you know, scaling and starting up? What kind of questions would you ask yourself if you're really looking at starting something new?
Now looking back, if I were, you know, more of a noob or something like that, I mean, one of the biggest is, you know, I'm blessed to be in a position where I give good advice to, I mean, I've even traveled to army bases where I speak to soldiers in transition about entrepreneurship as they come back to, you know, be a civilian. Like, I love teaching people how to be successful, do what they're doing better than they're doing, kind of thing. And I really, really harp on know yourself, because it's like, there's a million ways to make $1 million. We've heard that, and it's accurate. You got to know what fills you up. Because at the end of the day, if all you're chasing is money, man, your ass is already broke. As far as I'm concerned, you need to do something that is like that is purposeful, that you enjoy, because there's plenty of days where you're not making money. There's plenty of days that suck. And if you're at least doing something that you love to do that fills you up in other ways, it's going to be okay. Right. So I always tell people, start there, because if you don't know what direction you're going, you don't even know if you're getting there. So starting with some self-reflection is super important. Always plan on it taking longer and costing more. I mean, that's as cliche as you get, but it's true. Partnerships aren't always necessary. Sometimes it's like a safety net, right? There's enough information out there that you can probably get to a point. Because a lot of times I've seen a lot of people that'll give up a lot of equity on the front side of it. And a good idea, money's always available for the right idea with the right marketing plan. You know, there's a lot of money out there. You don't have to give up the farm kind of deal. That's certainly one. Don't fall in love with potential. That's another one, I believe. So a lot of times, you know, nobody thinks their baby's ugly, right? Well, sometimes that's an ugly baby, and you gotta, you know, maybe that's a bad analogy, but you know what I mean. You fall in love with potential. Sometimes you'll ride it until it's too late. Don't risk money you can't afford to lose. That's why OPM is so important. Always use other people's money. You know, that's a fun one. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of stuff, and it's really kind of case by case. So sometimes people come up with an idea that could quickly and easily be executed on, and you know, measure fast, adjust, measure fast, adjust. If you fail fast, fall forward, keep going, right? But always learn. You know, you're winning or learning. You've heard that before, right? You don't lose, you just learn. All these types of things. But I think more than anything, it's more of a mental game. If you're already a victim, this probably is not for you. So you just got to kind of get right in a lot of ways mentally. I felt like that's been one of my biggest strengths, is just thick skin, short memory, man, really. So you got to be prepared to do this, because this world ain't easy. It's worth it, but it's not easy.
You talked about, you know, needing to learn from failure there. And one of the things that we always like to ask on this show is just, you know, can you give us maybe a time that you failed, a time that something went wrong, you know, a time where you didn't do what was right and how you learned from it? Is there one that stands out to you in your career?
Well, I feel like words are powerful. So I would never say I did anything that wasn't right. I made the wrong decision, right? I always do what's right. And I think that's something that everybody should aspire to do, by the way. you know, just integrity in general. But wrong moves, yeah. I actually achieved $1 million status on two other occasions, lost it all, overinvested. I put six figures into multiple different ventures I had no business being in. Because I was even cocky enough back in the day that my password was the kid can't miss, right? Because I just kept nailing them, right? And then I took this money and I invested in this, had no business being in that, couldn't impact it. So one of the questions I asked is, can I impact this deal? Is this something that my skill set can specifically impact on a daily basis, right? And probably three of the ventures I got in, not ironic, I lost money in all three of them. The answer is no. I had no business being in it, right? And being a smarter investor, asking the right questions, learning, you know, you learn by failure, learn by getting punched in the face, what questions to ask. So my questions are getting better and better. And I, you know, seek counsel. Is another one. There's a mastermind that I'm a part of, boardofadvisors.com. I'm actually one of the founding members of that, and just having good counsel around you, they help me know the better questions to ask, think through scenarios so that I'm asking better questions, kind of thing. So, back in the day, I was just ready, fire, aim, the warrior, right? Just going crazy with all this stuff. I was, there's one thing that I did, the biggest mistake I ever made, that turned into the biggest reward that I ever got, was I was completely stretched out. I was working, I had multiple hands and multiple deals. It was a company called Passive Massive. And my only focus was creating, massive amounts of passive income. That was the goal, through affiliate and overrides and commissions and things like that. What happened is I fell in love with the hype, and I was too busy being too busy. I had to be moving. It was 2 a.m. I didn't give a shit. I had to keep going. And I quickly lost track of the most important things in my life. And at that point, it was a brand new daughter. My wife and I had gotten married just a little bit before that. And I just assumed, I kept telling myself, it's like, oh, you're doing it for your family. You're doing it for family. It was not the case. The family doesn't need that, want that, right? And that's a very common misconception. So when you say, what mistakes did I make? What did I do wrong? I certainly did that wrong. And I got some very timely advice. And it helped me kind of start getting back on track. But then I nearly died shortly after that. And while you're laying there, it's different, right? Like, perspective changes on things. You're like, oh, I see it now. And now I'm not just hearing it. I see, I might not wake up tomorrow. That's going to suck. Good thing I have all these deals going on, right? That's not a conversation you have internally. So that led to the transition, me clearing my plate, getting rid of a lot of the things that were just eating me up, right? And then, you know, in comes Dugout Mugs, and the transition became like, we even had a conversation at the very beginning, Justin. It's like, yeah, what are you doing with the rest of your day? Well, whatever the hell I want, right? And it comes from, I only do the things that I'm best at on a daily basis until that stuff is done for the day. I may have nothing to do until next Monday, man. We'll see what happens. But I got to the point where being busy for the sake of being busy, is not a priority, right? So that was the biggest moment that turned into the biggest transition. That was the biggest blessing that has now mega positively impacted my life. And now I have a second daughter, right? So yeah, not business related, but it is, right? Because it's not business and life, it's life.
It's amazing to me to see the parallels. We obviously have a lot of creatives in the sports industry who listen to this podcast, right? But you talk about busy for being the sake of busy, right? And you feel like you finish a project and you might be done early with it, but you have more time until your deadline, right? And then you mess with it and you mess with it until it's 2 a.m. in the morning, and then it's not as good as it was, right? So it's amazing to me to see the parallels between your world and the creative world and how there's so much crossover. And that's why I love managers and people in positions, people in executive positions who manage the way of you have work to do, you need to get it done. We're not here to punch a clock. We're here to get work done, right? And basing merit off that. And I think that's a huge lesson a lot of managers can take in a new school mentality on how to manage your employees, especially in the creative industry too.
Yeah. And so report, like if you were to go, people don't leave Dugout Mugged, man. Our turnover is very low because we treat people the way we want to be treated, right? They do a good job. Like I showed up one day, everybody was in a, like, you know, sour mood. I'm like, all right. So I went to the store. I started writing thank you cards and every single person was getting a thank you card and a gift card. And I'm just walking around, just changing things. Right. We do stuff like that for our people. And like you said, our sales guy, he's like, oh, how many hours do I need? I'm like, bro, here's your quota. If it takes you 2 weeks or 2 days, I don't care. That's your job. When your job's done, do whatever you want to do. You want to travel around the country with your girlfriend and you still get the job done? I don't care. Right. So it's letting people, you know, the whole, you want something? If there's a lot of business leaders that listen to this. So here's something that we adopted recently. And I was talking with Randall because every year we like having like this overarching like theme of the year. And this year was give direction, not directions. Right. It's like, okay, guys, do we all see what this painting looks like? Like this is dug out now 6 months, 12 months from now. Do we all see this clearly? Okay. That's where we're going. Bye. Right. You hire good people and they see the direction we're going. You don't have to tell them how to get there. They got questions they'll ask. Right. But you just take that micromanagement off of them, man. It's crazy. We were growing. I think mid year, we were at 2.5x the previous year growth rate. It's crazy. You know, just by giving people direction over directions, you'd be surprised. Sometimes they're pretty damn talented and they come up with something that you didn't even see.
I see that all the time as a manager. I mean, it's because also by giving them control, they're going to take ownership of it and you're going to hear less complaints. You're going to get the best out of them by allowing them to take the reins and build more on top of it. So I love that perspective.
Yeah. And focus your time on making them happy, right? Just creating a, just an aura around the business, you know, the culture. You focus on the culture, right? And they'll just love you forever. And like you said, they'll get it done.
So we've talked a lot about the business background and your background. For Dugout Mugged, it started as you talked a little bit about the MLB licensing that you guys got through in 90 days. And is that where it started? Is that the logos were on the mugs? And where have you gone to since then? Give us a little bit more background on that.
No, so it was the PA, the Players Association. What it did is it gave us rights to the players' names, likenesses, autographs, things like that, right? We etch them in the mug. Well, where it started for the first 90 days, I told Randall, so he had his own ideas, right? He had nobody to bounce these ideas off of. He took it a good ways, like 60,000 in sales before I ever met him. Just belly to belly, you know, baseball games. Like he hustled, right? But he only had his way of thinking, right? And it's not necessarily marketing related, or certainly wasn't at the time. So I told him, I said, listen, we have to get more, you know, he was a baseball guy. So he's speaking baseball. It's like, but that's not who's buying our stuff, right? So I started changing, you know, these kinds of things, and the marketing is where it started. I showed him something on social media because back in the day I had a couple social media management companies as well, or two of the many things. And I said, watch this. And I put up a meme of Jackie Chan. And he like one of these things. He said, you go into the bar, ask about all the craft beer, and then you order a Miller Lite. Right. It was just funny. And I shared it, and it got like 1,000 shares. And he's like, just angry. He's like, I don't understand this. I'm doing all this purposeful stuff over here, and this thing gets 1,000 shares. It's like, now you're starting to understand the mental state of people that are paying attention to what we're doing. Once you do that, then we can scale this up. So I said, now there's 30 baseball cities. Let's just start because everybody has an affinity to either a city or a team. Right. And I said, let's just put the city name on there, a generic baseball diamond with cross bats. If they're an Angels fan, you send them the one that says Anaheim. They're a Mets or Yankees fan, send them the one that says New York. That's it. And we did like $40,000 or $50,000 in sales of those pretty quickly. And then I was like, okay. So then I called the PA and they gave us our license. And we started doing player stuff. So it's like Mike Trout or Francisco Lindor or whoever. And we started there. And then after a year of that license, which we did pretty well, I mean, we did over $1 million our first year. And then we went to MLB. And there's a guy named Marco that used to work for us. He's still a friend of mine to this day. I've known him for a long time. And he went to MLB to get licensing. They're like, nah, go away. You know, we have drinkware, go away. And he's like, this isn't drinkware. This is collectible. And he caught their ear and they said, okay, let's do this. You know, let's have a call. And I had a call with them and they were quick to shoot us down. You know, we're little peons in their mind. It's a cup company. What can these guys possibly be doing? Well, then we showed them our numbers and they're like, oh, wow. Okay. Well, I guess you guys know how to sell these things. And they're like, well, we'll give you a license, but it is X $100,000 minimums guaranteed, blah, 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 thinking that that would kind of deter us. But at that was the moment where Randall, I sat down, I'm like, all right, dude, it's game time. You know, are you ready? And we agreed. And we said, okay, we'll take that deal. And they were kind of taken back because this new company that was only a year and a half old stepped in. And now today, by the way, we are in the top like 5 fastest growing licensees in the last 10 years. You know, we're just absolute rocket ship status at MLB. You know, I was talking to them the other day and they said, you guys have done in 3 years what most companies can't 20, which is, you know, huge to hear that kind of feedback. Right. But it's all about belief. You know, I tell Randall all the time, if your plan's better than their plan, they're going with your plan. So we believed and we could see that we could very clearly see where we were going and we could articulate that to them where we were going. And then guess what? You show up and you go there because otherwise it didn't matter. Right. But we knew what we were capable of and we had the grit to get there. That's how it all kind of happened.
That's awesome. You touched on three different things that I wrote down throughout that I think is super pertinent is that you brought in diversity of thought between the two of you. You talked about the audience and changing the perspective of how you were initially approaching how to sell to better fit the audience that you wanted to reach to sell and your risk that you walked in and knew that you had to come up with the money to pay for the licensing in order to grow the business. So I guess I don't know what kind of question I want to ask. I just think it's interesting that when you relate it to content, like I feel like those three things really stand out when you're creating content.
I think taking the time to understand your target demographic is completely underestimated. We still to this day poll our people on a regular basis. Hey, why'd you buy the mug? When'd you buy the mug? How much you pay for it? How much you think this new one should be worth? Everything we can ask. And then we calculate that, you know, sometimes we're wrong, but not very often anymore because we know what they want and we do that. Same thing with your demo. Take the time. If you have a decent, you know, 2,000, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 people on social media, look at the breakdown. Are they men? Are they women? Are they, you know, predominantly based in Utah? I don't know. Right. But the more, you know, the more accurate you can be with your marketing, because marketing is about speaking to people where they are, right? Get what you think out of your own head. That was the biggest first step we had to do. Hey, I know what you're thinking, but it doesn't matter, right? Are we on the same page? It doesn't matter. What they think matters, that's what matters. So let's ask them what they think matters. They'll tell us, and then we do that. And then when it gets bigger, rinse and repeat. And we've never stopped doing that. You know, I have 65 page reports, like everything you could possibly imagine down to their favorite TV show about like 200,000 people. We know who our people are. And, you know, 42-year-old woman is a primary buyer of our product. Right. So I'm not going out here doing this Jersey Shore jalopy stuff. Right. Doesn't make sense. You want a picture of a mom driving like 6 kids to the game and her getting hugged on and loved on and then hand her a dugout mug because real heroes deserve trophies. That's what she wants to see. right? And it helps you really dial in your marketing, which dials down your dollars too.
Yeah, and I also saw that you guys have started to get into some engraving. So when you're talking about the 42-year-old woman and then some pictures engraved on mugs now, I feel like that's totally the market that you're also trying to reach with that.
Yeah. Well, so there's a saying we like, and it's, we don't make mugs, we make memories, right? So you can have an affinity to your team, but you can also, we're making mugs for fallen soldiers. Did you see the Soldier's Cross mug that we recently came up with? It's incredible, right? People are going to drink out of these and cry, right? These are going to sit on shelf with dog tags hanging around them. Like, that's why we did it. Not just because there were the one, you know, Uncle Frank drinks out of a mug that says Frank's Juice and it's a Red Sox mug. That's cool too. That has a place. But really what we found is that when we make a super premium product, which is what we did, you know, we needed to take that to the next level. You know, we're collaborating with Topps right now, the baseball card company, Miller Lite, Coors, Budweiser, DraftKings, Coca-Cola, Lone Depot, like you name it. And some of these things are commemorative. The one we're doing with Topps, we're actually taking baseball cards and etching them on the front of the mugs and doing limited runs on like the 35 edition 1987 Topps Bo Jackson Future Stars card. It's really cool. So why we did it is because we wanted to continue to innovate. And it's not just the mug. Like, we have the wine glass, we have the whiskey glass, we have the stainless knob shot glasses made out of bat handles, baseball bat handle bottle openers. You know, we just continue to innovate. And then one of the newer iterations was with higher quality lasers, we can create a higher quality design.
You talk about that market research and all the, you know, the numbers that you have and the way that drives you. You know, how much is there a balance between taking and giving the consumer what they want and also not getting too boxed in? And, you know, because sometimes a consumer doesn't know exactly what they want, or you have an idea that is going to be something new that they may not even be thinking of as an option. You know, how much do you balance taking those numbers and just following them and still being innovative in your space?
There's a couple. So there's some focus groups. You know, you get 50, 100 people of a particular demo that you know is predominantly yours, and just ask questions. Ask the right questions. Like, you got to learn how to ask questions. What price point would you be like, that's too much, I have to think about it. Is it $30? Is it $40? Is it $34.99? Oh, $34.99 is a knee-jerk reaction. Next product, guys, we're coming up with $34.99, right? So it's not that simple, but you ask the right questions. And then we have a saying, Randall and I, if it's not a hell no, it's a hell yes. So if he comes to me with something stupid and I'm like, that's stupid, but it's not a hell no, give it a go. And vice versa. But sometimes it's like, dude, hell no, like that ain't going to work. And so we're both creatives, right? Like, I'm a super creative guy. He's a super creative guy. So you should see the ideas that are flying around. And there's a couple products that we launched, fail fast, fall forward. We try, it sucked, move along. Don't fall in love with the potential of it. Because what if we spent 80% of our time trying to put this round peg in a square hole when everybody's like, hey, when you guys are done goofing off, would you please make more bat mugs, right? So it's really just take a very small segment of our time. It can't add new moving pieces that are going to interrupt or cannibalize what we already have going on. But we're always going to test and play and try and do fun things.
Going forward, are you able to talk about anything coming up where you're going next?
And yeah.
You talked about it being a memory company and a memorabilia company as opposed to just a drink company. So I guess with that benchmark, where do you go from there?
I think being a drink or a cup company is probably one of the last things we are, right? And the international appeal of what we're doing, our mugs are currently in Australia, Japan, Dominican Republic, Puerto Rico, Mexico, Canada. People love them, right? They love what we're doing. And I think the reason we haven't, you know, really exponentially grown that is we can't make enough. like we're making these things as fast as we can. Cause one of the things Randall and I agreed on a long time ago is we're never going to jeopardize quality for quantity. So we're only able to double year over year. Right. So it's even that alone is astounding. In my opinion, that our team has been able to keep the wheels on and keep things so tight. But the demand is there and our brand is there. To be honest, a lot of times things can be knocked off. Now we have a stellar legal team, right? And they love going to war, right? So we're fortunate in that respect. But I think really what's kept everybody at bay is the fact that they look at us like, we can't beat these guys, right? And because we've built a brand, a community. And it, when you see a bat mug, you're like, oh, that's a dugout mug. Right? It's just what it is. So I think with that kind of support, I think national and international growth is inevitable. I think some of our products, the stainless steel mug, it's a 20 ounce screw top. It replicates an aluminum bat barrel, like the old school aluminum bat barrels. There's a fun story on how we came up with the cap on that. I'll tell you real quick. So I was dropping my daughter off at school. And we were in the middle of talking about like, what's it going to look like? How are we going to make the cap? And I saw two old of those Easton Green Machine baseball bats sitting in a trash pile. And I pulled over and I'm climbing around in a trash pile, picking these bats out so that I can pop off the cap. And we took it into the warehouse. And I'm like, dude, this is it. This is what we were talking about. And then we reverse engineered it. They had to recreate it, but we used it to make like a 3D scan. And then we threw it away. And then we chopped it all up and moved some pieces around. But it was emulated the black cap on a bat. So it really looks like a little bat barrel. But that one in particular, I think brands like Yeti and Tervis and others have educated the market on what a stainless tumbler is and does. So it's a lot easier for someone to understand that. So I think that might be a really big retail play. Big box stores have been after us for a little while now. We've just shot them down because we can't make the wood mugs fast enough. Plus, there's an education component involved with drinking out of wood. Oh, is it a koozie or, whereas the stainless, I think, is pretty easy to understand. So I see us doing a lot more domestic distribution. International's happening already. We're already in all 30 major league parks. We're in a handful of the minor league parks and then some little mom and pop shops across the country so far.
What else, boys? What have we missed, Chris?
The other thing is our Cheers to Charity initiative. It's a philanthropic arm of Dugout Mugs. It's where we've collaborated with most of these guys. We've already donated over $50,000 with this program. Some of the names in it are really relevant, like Cal Ripken's next month and Justin Turner the following month and Pujols Foundation, the Rizzo Foundation, Mariano, Pudge, Big Poppy. All these are guys that we worked with our Cheers to Charity initiative. Now, just like those relative names, there's also guys you've never even heard of in your whole life. Random guy, Jay, who in Texas is somebody in his family. I believe his nephew had mental disability and couldn't play ball. So he's like, all right, I'll just start my own league for only these kids. And now there's like dozens and dozens of kids that are playing ball and having fun being kids, even though they're a little different. So he was the hero in our mind. Dominican Republic, we sent a bunch of bats and balls and gloves from Rawlings. Our friends gave us a bunch of brand new gloves for all these kids down there that are orphans. Yeah, just cool, fun stuff that we've been able to do with our Cheers to Charity initiative. It's kind of like us transitioning from, passion to purpose, or profits to passion to purpose kind of thing. It's been really cool for us to roll that out over the last 18 months, and we do it every single month now. So that's been a lot of fun as well.
Well, thank you so much for making Creative Sports Podcast part of your day. We'd love to hear your thoughts, feedback, and suggestions, so pop on over to the Sports Creative Community on Slack and connect with us and your fellow creatives. If you're enjoying this podcast, we'd love it if you shared it with a friend or a coworker, and leave us a 5-star rating so other people will be able to find us as well. And don't forget to subscribe so that you're the first person to catch each new episode. Remember, the world needs your voice, so keep creating.